Our first lesson from Scripture today comes from the book of Acts, chapter 1, verses 6 through 14. Then they gathered around him and asked, "Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom of Israel?" He said to them, "It is not for you to know the times or dates the Father has set by his own authority. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and in all Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth." After he said this, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. They were looking intently up into the sky as he was going, when suddenly two men dressed in white stood beside them. "Men of Galilee," they said, "why do you stand here looking into the sky? This same Jesus, who has been taken from you into heaven, will come back in the same way you have seen him go into heaven." Then the apostles returned to Jerusalem from the hill called the Mount of Olives, a Sabbath's day walk from the city. When they arrived, they went upstairs to the room where they were staying. Those present were Peter, John, James and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James, son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas, son of James. They all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. The second reading comes from the first letter of Peter, chapter 4, verses 12 through 14, and chapter 5, verses 6 through 11. "Dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come on you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice inasmuch as you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted because of the name of Christ, you are blessed, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you." And now to 5, 6, 1 through 11. "Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, and he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. To him be the power forever and ever." Here ends the reading of God's holy word. May the Lord grant his blessing to the reading and the hearing of it.
It's time to pray to the God who watches o'er us. It's time to seek his help without delay. The world is dark, for the clouds of war still threaten. It's time for all America to pray. If we would keep the flag of freedom flying, secure the peace for which we all are crying, it's time to pray. Our sin and wrong confessing, it's time for all America to pray. Enemies increase around us, we can't drop our guard. Problems here at home confound us in our own backyard. Troubles unrelenting round us, making living hard. It's time to pray. It's time to pray to the God who watches o'er us. It's time to seek His help without delay. The world is dark, for the clouds of war still threaten. It's time for all America to pray. It's time for all America to
All right, I think it's time for the children's service. Do you have any children here today? Any children? Okay, well, the children come on up here.
I have to take it quick. I'm just going to go over here and get a little sound check. Don't mind me. Actually, I'll leave it.
All right. Let's talk turkeys. More importantly, let's talk chickens, okay? Who here knows about chickens? You know about chickens? Who do you know about chickens? You can tell me that this is a picture of it. All right. He says it's a chicken. Can everyone see it? Alright, I said it. Who said it? Alright, you need to go back to health class. And then I think we just What do we know about the rooster? What do you know about the rooster? Only in Foghorn Leghorn. They're vicious. Okay, what is vicious? Vicious. Oh, they are delicious. So a rooster, just so we're clear, is the male chicken. Okay, and they're big, and they have to come home. And what else do they do? How do they act? How do they act? What do they do all day?
They try to drop some eggs.
Yes, they do. What sound do they make? That's the third. They say cock-a-doodle-doo. When do they do it? In the morning. In the morning, and when the sun rises, that's also in the morning. When else do they do it? Come on. How about who said all day? They do it all day long. Doesn't matter. Starting in the morning until it goes to bed at night, all the rooster does is crow. Does a little weaving. That's pretty much it. Alright. Alright, let me see if I can get my pastor Sonny approved prop. Alright. So we know. Oh, gotcha. Alright. What's this? What kind of chicken is it? And don't say it's a golden-crested Polish banner, because that is what it is. But what is it? It is not a rooster. It is a lot. It is a lot of chicken. This is a hen. All right? How can we tell this is a hen? No flashy head. Thank you, John, behind the chicken farm. While beautiful, she has no flashy head on. What does this chicken do all day? Oh, it does eat. What else does it do? It does lay eggs. What does it do when it lays eggs? No, it doesn't sit on them all. What does it do, John? What noise do they make, John? Just a little bit of clocking, and then that's it.
You don't hear my head. She's not even talking now. All she does is eat real wine and don't eat her.
She does a little bit of clocking when she lays an egg, and that's it.
We're going to put her back in the box. There you go.
Now, when I'm at home and I hear my rooster crow, do you think I go outside and yell, "It's morning"? No, why don't I do that?
Because
they scream all day, that's right. Now, let's say I hear my hen do a little bit of clucking. And I go up, what do I expect to see? That's right, I expect to see an egg. What happens if I go up and I don't see an egg? Well, that's true, I don't eat anything for breakfast. Do you think I'm happy? Do you think I'd grab the chicken and say, "You fooled me"? Not really, you can feed him and then leave. We try again. Now, people and Christians can be a lot like chickens. Okay. Some people that are like the rooster, they do a lot of crawling and say, "Hey, come on, check it out, look what I'm doing." And then you get there and you realize, oh, it's the same thing as always doing it. Frankly, it isn't that important. Alright, now, other people, these are the people you want to be like. They're like the hen. You really pay much attention to the hen. He's up there working pretty hard. When he does something, he might say, "Hey, take a look at what I did." But then that's it. Alright. So, what do you got? What kind of Christians would you be going forward now? A chicken. What kind of chicken?
The hen.
No, we'll repeat the lesson for you later. You like the hen. Be quiet about what you're doing, but when you do something, make sure there's something there for people to see it back. Alright? Okay. Now I'm not going to touch the candy because I touched the chick. So, someone grabbed the candy basket. And also, somebody has graciously donated some rubber wristbands. So everyone gets a wristband. There's a little basket here. And then take as much candy as you possibly can. True story, when I was uphill and in at Minersville, I did the same children's sermon, except with a stuffed chicken. Pastor Sonny happened to have been there to, quote, make sure I wasn't preaching any heresies. And afterwards, she said, I said, "What'd you think of the sermon?" And she said, "The children's message was very good." So, that's her way of saying, "I didn't like your sermon." All right, great candy and get the bracelets. So take two bracelets. Everyone good? All right.
Well, I'll tell you, Alan, where's Alan at? We got to fix the battery in the clock back there because it's not working. All right, here we go. Tale of Two Cities. Just the other month, a local civically minded businessman was telling me a story of a trip he took into Ohio. After the conclusion of the business there, he and his wife decided to do a little sightseeing, as they were in the habit of doing. They stopped at a large mansion that had been turned into a museum and walked through marveling at the luxurious decorations and high craftsmanship of the house, but noted there wasn't much information about what the man who had built the house had done. Seeing a tour guide, the man asked what the owner had done besides build this grand house. The guide seemed confused by this question and said that he had built this house and furnished it very nicely. I see that, said the man, but I come from Pennsylvania and close by is a town named Jim Thorpe, where Asa Packer lived. He too was very wealthy and built and furnished a house every bit as nice as this one. Besides that, he paid for many improvements in his town, helped build a beautiful local church, founded Lehigh University, made it tuition-free for the first 20 years of its existence, founded the Lehigh Valley Railroad and provided jobs for thousands in the area, and other things. So I ask you, what did this businessman do for his community here? The guy thought for a little bit and said, he not only built this house, but he also built very nice houses for his sons and daughters. Hearing this, the couple leave confused and left a confused tour guide. While telling me this story, the man could not remember the name of the businessman, the town, or why it was so important to turn this house into a museum. In short, it was not much of a memorial to the man. All right, we're leaving Ohio. We're going to Greece now. Let's set the scene. The year is 490 BC. The Persians have created the largest empire the world has yet seen. It stretches from Eastern Europe and the Balkans all the way to India. At over 2.2 million square miles, it still ranks as one of the largest empires of all time. Now, when you have such a large empire, I'm told, you're going to have some problems, and the Persians had a big one. It was called the Ionian Revolt. These Ionians were descendants of Greeks who had crossed the sea and settled in what is now Turkey hundreds of years before. And these Ionians decided that they didn't want to be part of the Persian Empire anymore. And they said so. Some of the cities even decided to declare themselves democracies. Now, naturally, King Darius, you remember King Darius, he's in the Bible, father of Xerxes. Everyone remembers that, right? Okay. Anyway, Darius didn't take too kindly to this and sent in the troops. Realizing that they were in trouble, the city seek help from their distant relatives back in Greece, and the city of Athens sends troops and ships to help. It's kind of what you have to do. So a lot of fighting goes on. Long story short, the Ionians lose. And they lose bad. They're brought back under control, and the control is harsh. Now, thankfully for the Athenians, they just jumped back on their ships, and they went home, out of the reach of the Persians. However, King Darius was not in a forgive-and-forget kind of mood. And to make sure he didn't forget, he had a special servant whose only job was to tell him three times every day before he ate supper, "Master, remember the Athenians." Now, years go by in preparation by the Persians, and an increasing worry by the Athenians, because they knew what was coming. Finally, Darius assembled his forces and sends a large army and navy towards Greece, conquering as it goes. Not only does he have the desire for revenge and the manpower to get it, but he has Hippias. Now, Hippias was the former co-ruler of Athens that got kicked out 20 years earlier, after his brother, who also ruled with him, was stabbed to death in the open streets by two homosexual men that he was involved in a love triangle with. Long story, not important. Anyway, he booked it out of there. He booked it out of there as fast as he could and went and hung out with the Persians. So you could say Hippias is the perfect piece of intelligence weaponry to have. Now, based on intelligence from Hippias, the leaders land about 40 kilometers from Athens and start unloading the troops. And he has a lot of unloading to do. 25,000 infantry, 1,000 cavalry, 850 ships, and 100,000 oarsmen to row them around, and to be used as reinforcements if things are needed. This is a big army. Athens hears of this and freaks out, because it seems like Darius's promise to come and kill them and burn their city to the ground is not just a question anymore. It's now the Persians are coming, they're going to kill us, and they're going to burn our city down to the ground. So, they gather every man in the city who can fight, all 9,000 of them. And they get 1,000 men from a neighboring city called Plataea for a total of 10,000 whole Greeks. And they make their way to meet the Persians. They also send a messenger to Sparta to ask for some reinforcements with the pretty good enticement of, when they're done with us, they're coming for you. So here we are. We got about 126,000 Persians up against 10,000 Greeks with 26,000 of them formed up with the sea to their backs, and 10,000 Greeks formed up in front of them across the plain with the mountains and their city behind them. The Greeks managed to seal off the only two mountain passes that they could use to move forward. So the Persians can't move, and the Greeks can't move. They're just sitting there waiting for help. Thankfully, the messenger makes it back from Sparta and says, "Too bad. Sparta's having a very sacred festival dedicated to peace, and they can't possibly make it for 10 days. But they'll be here when the party's over." So the waiting game begins. 5 days go by, and the Greek spies come back and report that overnight the Persian cavalry is loaded back onto the ships, and everyone's left to sail around the peninsula, because Athens sits on a peninsula. And this can only mean one thing. They're going to sail around the peninsula, land, and attack Athens from behind. Not only that, but the 25,000 infantry are still waiting there in front of them, just waiting to crush them between the two armies. Well, good General Miltiades does the only thing he can do. They form up a battle line with the center intentionally weak and the flanks heavily reinforced. And at dawn, they run, and I mean literally run, at the Persians. So the Persians attack too, and they push through the center of the line thinking, ha ha, they're weak, look at them running. What they don't understand is the Greeks are outflanking them and wrapping around them. Well, they realized when it was too late, because carnage ensues as the panicked and lightly armored Persians make for the ship, only to get stuck in a swamp where the Greeks promptly pack them to pieces. Now, at the end of the battle, 6,400 Persians are dead, and only 192 Athenians and 11 of those Plataeans are dead with them. Now, to commemorate this great victory and to honor their dead, they created a memorial. They take all the men together, and they bury them in one mass grave, figuring they served together and died together, they should be buried together. So they build the mass grave, and they pile a huge earthen mound up over top of it, right in the middle of the battlefield. And that memorial is still visible to this day. Okay, question time. Can anybody tell me the name of the battle? Volunteer, come on. Hand up. Okay. Now, what if I told you this is a very famous word, and there's a lot of companies named after it, and that you may have bought oil, cheese, insurance, or other things from companies named after this battle? That's Alan with the huge alarm, or the huge clock back there, telling me the time. Or I can guarantee you some of you have bought gas from a service station named after this, because I know I have. All right, anyway. Okay, no. What if I told you that I left out some of the story, that I jumped to the end and left out part of the middle? Maybe if I give you the whole story, you can figure it out. All right, so after the battle, they killed all these Persians. Athenians are standing around feeling pretty good. But then they realize, oh, yeah, the other Persians in the cavalry, they jumped on ships, and they're going to go burn our city to the ground, and we're standing here congratulating ourselves. So they leave the battlefield, and they make it back to the city, secure it, and send some troops over to the beach that they know the Persians had to land on, and they secure it, thus preventing the Persians from landing. Now some time goes by, and they realize they've been outmaneuvered. So the Persians eventually give up, get back on the ship, and they head for home. Yay! Great victory for Athens, huh? All right, what was the name of the battle? Okay. What if I told you that the Athenians made it back to their city by the afternoon of the battle after completing a blazing fast march of 40 kilometers with full armor and weapons, all this after doing battle all morning? And what if I told you that 40 kilometers is 26 miles, 386 yards, or more commonly, 26.2 miles? There we go, marathon. So, what is the point of all this? Let's consider the first story, the museum, which is really a museum is nothing more than a memorial dedicated to somebody. In this case, a memorial dedicated to a rich businessman. While probably planned as fascinating, its impact is really nothing. Someone who had actually been there couldn't remember anything of importance about it. And couldn't tell me the name of the town, couldn't tell me the man's name, nothing. And this is the kind of man that doesn't forget details. As a memorial, it was a failure. Now, the second story is different. Over 2,500 years later, the grave, the physical memorial, still stands. We may never see it, but millions know of the battle. Why is that? Because through the centuries, people have kept the memory of those soldiers who fought and died to ensure democracy and preserve the lives of their families. Only much later did the word come to be borrowed as the name of an endurance race that recreates an event that happened on that day. See, words and stories have power and endurance, enduring power. Physical memorials are nothing without someone to tell you why and how they are important. The running of a race, the using of a word, you, me, using the word from now on, will keep alive the memory of those Greeks and the 203 who died making the ultimate sacrifice in defense of liberty. Today, as we remember the members of our armed forces who died in service, I ask you that if we want them to be remembered, can we be confident that a mere physical memorial will be sufficient to do justice to their cause and their deaths? Or will it be more effective to harness the power of words to tell the present and future generations of their deeds and why they died? To me, the answer is clear. It's words and stories. So, at this time, let us go out to the cemetery in a solemn fashion to hear about the deeds of our service people who have fought and died.